Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach just outside of Washington, D.C. Bad traffic is a good time for brainstorming and brain dumping, and as a coach, I get a chance to work with people all across all content areas, all grade levels. So I try to distill the best of what I'm hearing and thinking and reading down into about 10 to 15 minutes every Monday. I hope you like what you're listening to. This week, it's Martin Luther King Day, and so we're celebrating a day on and not a day off. I'll talk about what a day of service could look like in your classrooms today, but first things first, a bit of housekeeping. If you like what you're hearing and you want to continue the conversation, please feel free to shoot a message to me. I'm at Meehan, EDU, on Twitter. We'd gladly join a dialogue with you. The purpose of these podcasts is really to get the brains, you know, firing on all cylinders, but never to stop the conversation, really just to start it. So please, yeah, message me. I'm all in. And if you like what you're reading or thinking or hearing on Twitter or on the podcast, feel free to check out my website. I'm www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up about teaching. And I hope to get you fired up too. I have a bunch of templates and resources there, activities and stuff like that. And I have a book. It's called Adrenaline Rush, which is all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. Things that get us fired up. So if you want to join in the conversation, message me. Let's do it. But this week, we're talking about Martin Luther King Day, spending a day away from school, but rather than thinking of it as a day off, like, hey, we don't have to do anything, continuing the legacy of Dr. King and thinking about a day on, a day of service. And that might be hard. It might be really hard when we think about it, because our curriculum is already jam-packed the way it is. I don't care whether you teach littles, middles, high schools, up to adult learners. There's always so much to do. Always, always, always so much to do. I teach, for my example, American literature. And in my American literature class, I have about 400 years of content to cover. It's a survey class, and we start with like the Puritans and work our way all the way up and through like the 20th century, like middle of the 1950s and 60s. So that's like 400 years of content to cover in only like 36 weeks. And that's if there is no snow days or if there are no cancellations or funny schedules. And I'll be honest, I've never worked in any school and not had some sort of funny schedules. It just happens. Snow days are an inevitability if you live where I live here in Washington, D.C. But if you don't live in D.C., maybe live in a place where it's like hurricane season or there's, you know, other, you know, just logistics that are beyond your control. And if, I don't know, cold and flu season hits and your kids, you miss one out of three kids in class on Monday, it's really hard to keep moving with your regularly scheduled program when you have so much to do. And I think the challenge is when we take a day off from school, immediately we're like, oh, let's recharge our batteries, let's breathe, let's think about not school for a second. And there's a lot of wisdom to that. You need to have squeezed out the sponge, so to speak, so you can fill it up again. But I'm wondering if there's a way that you can make service a part of your school day, again, in the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King, where it's not just, surprise, we're going to do a service project because it's Monday, but rather it's ingrained and enmeshed in your way that you approach your curricular design and the way that you think about school for what ultimately creates a relevant 21st century classroom that is cross-curricular and ultimately more enduring than any one lesson in any one book or any one unit students might study. Whether you teach, again, young guys or all the way up to the grown-ups. And I'm going to use my class as a case study or an example, just sort of walk you through it. But then immediately talk about other examples, how we can do it in other classes or content areas. I teach American literature, and it is a survey class. We start with summer reading. We do a little bit of Ernest Hemingway, and we read Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man this year. And then after that, we go into like a year-long study. We start in the 1600s. We talk about first Americans, tribes, and then we talk about the Puritans, things like the Scarlet Letter. From there, we move into the Founding Fathers. From the Founding Fathers, we move into this unit on Huckleberry Finn, or the era of American Romanticism, this westward expansion, and this idea of the growth of the country, manifest destiny, and the goods and bads that came from that. From there, we move into American Realism. We talk about social realism. We talk about the Harlem Renaissance. We talk about women's literature and the giving voices to people who had previously been marginalized. We spend a lot of time focusing on authors like Charlotte Perkins Gilman, who wrote The Yellow Wallpaper. And we do a little bit of work with like naturalism, Jack London, things like that, about environmental realism, those harsh conditions in the Yukon. From there, we move on through the modernists. That's the Great Gatsby in the 1920s, this idea of this loss of hope, this loss of morals, this loss of belief systems informed by World War I. And then from there, we kind of make our way out of the 1920s into the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, which is like, we're going to call it early contemporary or postmodern, where we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we rebuild our value systems after a time where World War I kind of erased everything? Then World War II kind of galvanized it all again. And, you know, who are we as a people? What cultural norms do we value? What do we continue with? And what things have we kind of jettisoned or left behind? Now, full disclosure, I am at a Catholic school, and so that does inform some of it. But my faith tradition doesn't have to be your faith tradition. I'm just sort of laying out a year's worth of a survey course in American literature. Now, through that, I've mentioned chronology, right? 1600s all the way up through the 1950s or 60s. But in each of these units, there's opportunities for relevant, real service-based learning. And in the spirit of Dr. King, it doesn't have to be service for any one person's. Rather, it's, again, judging people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. So, for example, and I can just look at the 10 units I kind of teach as case studies for service. If I'm talking about Ernest Hemingway, there is no reason when studying the stories of these war-torn, World War I, post-traumatic stress, coming back and being a lost generation, that I could not put my students in touch with things like the Wounded Warrior Project and perhaps have some sort of relevant 21st century service project that they could do that's informed by things like what Wounded Warrior does for our veterans. We know that there are 30-plus veterans every day who in the United States die by suicide. And so Hemingway himself dies by suicide. There's a lot of his own life bio that lends itself to the idea that when you come back from military service, you feel lost. You feel like you've maybe your purpose is gone. And especially these macho Hemingway code heroes, there's this idea of toxic masculinity that comes through with that, that we're not allowed to talk about our feelings. So what if we took, in the spirit of Hemingway, opportunities to serve our veterans, particularly male veterans who come back and don't know how to reacclimate into American society? And there's a ton of service projects, not just through Wounded Warrior, but through all sorts of service projects that help employment of veterans and help job skill training and help reacclimation to or veterans hospitals. And I'm in Washington, D.C., so there's tons of government organizations that are very easy to pipeline into as a case study there. Likewise, over the summer, they read Invisible Man. And in Ralph Ellison's book, it's about a narrator who is a person of color, and he believes himself to be invisible because he lacks identity. Because everyone who sees him only sees him for what they can use him for. And that includes a lot of white-on-black manipulation, but also black-on-black violence and these issues of paralleling issues of, like, the Black Panthers and, you know, social justice movements of the 1960s. Immediately, I think about Dr. King and Malcolm X and the idea that there's so much involved with what is the right way, if there is a right way, for persons who have privilege to extend their privilege, and what is the best way or the most effective way for persons who have been denied or made to feel invisible the opportunity to get that inclusion and that support and that recognition that they matter. Talk about James Baldwin, talk about the Black Lives Matter movement, talk about Colin Kaepernick and the NFL controversy for kneeling for the national anthem. Any one of these things immediately lend themselves into service-based learning and projects where students can do real relevant 21st century awareness, and then build through the jumping off point of this work of literature a deeper understanding of, like, a cultural context of today. And that's the type of thing that can inform not just a day like service project, but like a whole unit. In the spirit of Invisible Man, we're going to look at Black Lives Matter and talk about persons who've made to feel marginalized or invisible. We can look at examples of things like redlining in the 19 teens into the 20s, 30s, 40s, that when we read books like Raisin in the Sun, persons like the Younger family are systematically denied the opportunity to live in wealthier neighborhoods, places like Clybourne Park, or denied the opportunity to get loans or to get approved for different financial things because of the color of their skin. How much more, then, are we informing our study of this literature by Lorraine Hansberry that was written 50, 60 years ago, because we're taking it and saying there's a new relevance to it with an awareness of how it ties into service and the opportunity of equality and justice and social justice today. And again, you don't have to be in a Catholic school to think about a literature class as a great springboard for that. Things like Huckleberry Finn talk, of course, about race. Things like Charlotte Perkins Gilman and The Yellow Wallpaper talk about mental health and mental awareness. Talk about the asylum era and what we did or continue to do for persons who present with mental illness, and the treatment or mistreatment of persons who may present with atypical learning styles, learner profiles, with things like students who receive, extended time or expanded services, students who may be on the spectrum, students with learning disabilities or learning differences. There's a lot of service-based learning that could tie into that when you read about characters who may be, presenting as atypical, characters like Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird, or characters like Benji Thompson in Faulkner's The Sound of the Fury, persons with different mental abilities or limited mental acumen. How can we speak to service of those persons? Or in the study of, again, like Charlotte Perkins Gilman or Sylvia Plath, women particularly who've been made to feel marginalized by virtue of who they are just by their gender or their sexual orientation. Looking at these sorts of things through the eyes of service towards persons of tribal origin. Things like when reading the stories of first Americans or tribally enrolled persons, can we be more empathetic and sensitive and aware to things like the border crisis or the water in Flint, Michigan? We're talking about realism and social justice there. I see my class as but one thin end of the wedge to kind of jump into deep, deep learning. And every unit really does lend itself to a service-based component, which could be not just an essay, but like a research project or a volunteer opportunity or a website build or a multimedia piece, so that students are seeing relevant connectivity between what we're reading and what they're doing. Now, that's just an English class. If you're in a science classroom, I'm sure you can look at things like, environmental stewardship, right? If you're doing a biology, of course you can do those sorts of things. When you talk about chemistry, you can talk about volunteering at hospitals. And you're talking about, math classes and the opportunity to study real-life applications of these mathematical concepts. Things like building a park or building a ramp for a wheelchair access, that's algebra. That's geography, geometry, right? Like, these are the opportunities that lend themselves to practical, real-world, quote, problem-based learning or project-based learning. Certainly our world language classes are teaching empathy, how to speak on behalf of persons who may not be native speakers. And our history classes, our social studies classes, talking about studies of different cultures or marginalized people who have been systematically oppressed or denied opportunities. Like, once you start looking at your classrooms as not a means, not an ends to themselves, but a means to an end, what you recognize is you're not actually teaching the content. You're using the content to teach people and teach people how to be more empathetic, more socially aware, more kind, more involved, more in the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King, right? Like, that what they're doing is not because it was assigned to them, but rather it's the heart that beats inside of them, and they can't help but stand up for things that they see as issues of injustice, issues of oppression, issues of inequity or racism or ableism or sexism. There's so much that lends itself to that. And regardless of your school's faith tradition or your own personal political leanings, you, I'm sure, working with your school board or your collaborative team, can start to pull back those layers and realize this is an infinite rabbit hole you can follow down. Even something as simple as reading a book like The Giver, which is a sixth grade book, right, lends itself to studies of this idea of a perfect society and the type of things that would be included and the type of things that would be systematically denied or destroyed in this attempt at a utopia. How much more powerful then is that book if students have taken volunteer work in folks, homes for infirmed or the elderly, or in hospitals or nursing homes? There's so much there waiting to be, mined from those texts. And that's to say nothing of the things in our curriculum already about those difficult issues like genocide and the Holocaust, which immediately have museums and research lending itself to 21st century awareness of this, again, dignity of the human person and this content of someone's character, which really is the reason why we teach any of these texts or any of these stories, any of these units in the first place. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I would love to talk further on Dr. Martin Luther King Week. Please feel free to shoot me a message. I'm at MeehanEDU. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks again.